The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Christmas, Baby Please Come Home by Darlene Love from the classic Phil Spector A Christmas Gift for You album. Occurred to me I had not done any Christmas songs, and this is sort of the last day for it, so that's one of the greatest, definitely. If you want to treat yourself today, just go to YouTube and watch various clips of her doing that on Letterman over the years.
All right, is it snowing up there in the Twin Cities?
It's sputtering a little bit.
How much is on the ground? How much snow you got on the ground?
We had a pretty good snow about a week ago, and most of it's still here because it's been cold. But it's, I don't know, 5 or 6 inches, but that's not new. That's been there for several days.
And do you have a tree up?
We do, yep. Bigger than I wanted, but that tends to be the case. Smaller than in the past, but bigger than we wanted. Our house is a little bit more compact.
I would think up there in Minnesota, you just go out to the back 40 and chop one down, Chris. You basically get from the Christmas tree land up there, right? Like, are they cheaper, do you think, in the Twin Cities? They don't have to move as far.
I did not go on the purchasing mission this year, so I don't know what we paid for it. We went to some church in the neighborhood, church right. lot. That's I mean, you know, we live in the city, so we had not a lot of forest in the backyard.
No. All right. Grizzlies got the Clippers tonight. What would you say as we head into, we won't talk to you again until 2025. What's the state of the Grizzlies? How's this year been, and how should we feel about the lads?
This year's been great. This is only the third time in franchise history they have reached 20 wins before 10 losses, and the first time in a decade that they've done that. And they're second in the West, and they are the only team in the NBA that is top five, I think, unless this has changed since yesterday. I think top four, actually, on offense and defense. I think the real read on the team is a little bit less than that, because that is pretty incredible. But the real read is that, you know, you're thinking about playoff basketball and you have a lot of guys who haven't done it. And as good as the team's been, it doesn't feel like it's all clicked in place, really, which suggests like it could get even better, you know. But if they haven't had a really sustained stretch of Ja, Dez, Jared all together and all healthy, it feels like every time Ja plays, he's like coming off of an injury or Dez is coming off something. So you haven't gotten all three of those guys without any kind of health-related asterisks for like 2 or 3 weeks in a row. And who knows if you'll ever get that. But it feels like we're sort of waiting to see that, you know?
We're waiting to see that. And, of course, we're waiting to see the return of some pieces. Certainly Vince Williams was considered a key piece heading into the season. Yeah. We did get an update. What'd you make of that, by the way? 3 to 6 weeks. Would return to play in 3 to 6 weeks? That was what it was, right?
Yeah, and so the return to play, I mean, 3 to 6 weeks is still a while, especially if it's the sixth part, but it was return to play. And the previous update had been, will be reevaluated. So this was the reevaluation, and now it's a return to play, which is an upgrade over the uncertainty of, like, well, we'll look at it again and we'll see. And so 3 to 6 weeks is going to take it somewhere between mid and late January. which is still leaves a lot of the season to go to, like, get up to speed and get into the mix. And so, you know, it is the return of both those guys is now very much on the horizon.
So on the one hand, it's as good as it's been, and it hasn't even clicked into place yet. On the other hand, they have had an easier schedule. They have had a heavy East. If you compare how many games they've played against the East compared to the teams around them, that's about to change.
Right.
So that's the other part of this, though. Like, we don't it feels great, and maybe it could get better, but maybe it's also been artificially good.
The big test here, and it feels weird to talk about an easy schedule because, like, a third of the way into the season.
Right.
You know, at some point, like, the games are adding up. Like, if everything's been easy, maybe the Grizzlies are pretty good, right?
Right.
But they still have, according to, like, opponent winning percentage, they still have the toughest schedule left the rest of the way in the league. Now, the differences are small between, like, the toughest and the second and the third and the fourth and fifth and whatever. And they're almost all other teams in the West. And so... And that's just sort of the way it is, because there are more good teams in the West, and you'll play more of those going forward. I think more specifically for the Grizzlies, I think this is still true. I'm trying to remember since last time I made this point. Yeah, because the game that's Golden State was at home. They still have not won a road game against a Western Conference playoff contender. Now, they haven't had that many opportunities. It's only like four or five games total.
Right.
That's about to change. Like, over the course of the next... You know, they will get into it by the time we talk again. They will not be out of it, but they'll be into it by the time we talk again. They're going to go through a stretch for a few weeks where, like, most of the games are going to be road games against good teams in the West. And hopefully you'll go into that with Ja and Dez and Jaren back all together, if not Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson back, and you'll get a better sense for who you are as a team. I think it's very good news that Ja Morant is playing tonight. Like, that was only a one-game absence after his, that was a pretty hard fall on a place where he had already had significant injury. So I think that's a very positive sign.
Sean Coleman pointed out, to your point, that I don't know what we're going to call a contender in the West, but 12 of the next 14 are against...
I'm talking about Pete...
Top 12 in the West. So top 12 in the West, top 12 of the next 14 are against them. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about teams in the playoff race.
Yeah,
you know, like they've won at Portland and at Utah, right? Those don't count. New Orleans, I don't think they played at New Orleans. That doesn't count either. Those three teams are out. All the other three teams are in the mix. Like, the West is the thing where I think it's only a game and a half or something right now separate from 5th from 11th. So, like, you know, the idea if you could call a team currently 5th a contender, a playoff contender, and a team 11th not, like, it can change in 2 days,
right.
You know?
Of the things that have happened so far... Maybe the best things that have happened are Jaren looking stupendous and Ja looking great every time he plays, right? I guess, probably. But what would you say the happy developments have been apart from that, apart from the stars?
I mean, they're starting two rookies right now. You know, Zach Lee back in the lineup.
Right.
I mean, for those two players to be immediate positive contributors, and with Zach Eady, you know, was a lottery pick, 4-year guy. Maybe, you know, he's sort of hit, he's met expectation, maybe. But Jalen Wells, like, for him to be, a quality 3-and-D player immediately.
Crazy.
I think was a huge thing. And I think, you know, I mean, Scottie Pippen just had a huge game at Atlanta. But I think Scottie Pippen to step up from a two-way guy to a really, not only a really good backup point guard, but a guy who really... Because what they need in the regular season more than anything is a guy who can, like, fill in with Ja, because Ja's going to miss games. And he has done that superbly, in particular. And so I think Wells and Pippen really jump out as guys who have gone above and beyond what you should have been expected before the season started.
Jake LaRavia also, right? Wouldn't you say? Above and beyond?
Yeah, Jake LaRavia. I mean, you can just name every guy. You know, like
Brandon
Jake LaRavia, Santi Aldama.
Yeah, Santi, absolutely.
Yeah, Brandon Clark bounced back to sort of the level of production he had before. I think Santi, after a sort of a stagnant third season, has taken a real step forward here in year four and become one of the more productive bench players in the league. It's just up and down and all around. You know, I mean, the only guy who's really underperforming, I mean, Bane, it's really nice that Bane had his best game of the season, this last game at Atlanta. You know, Bane has been struggling, I think, coming off the oblique, and maybe he's making headway. The Marcus Smart thing remains weird. Just because there's no he's out so much
right.
For so many different things, like you can't just catch a rhythm with it. they haven't caught a rhythm with like Marcus Martin's role on the team, and there's reason to wonder if they just ever will at this point.
Yeah, it's so the only thing that are really disappointing, even Desmond Bane, is really injury related. So the only real disappointments have been injury disappointments. That Vince Williams Jr. got injured again right after he came back. That's been disappointing, right? And then Desmond Bane, it feels like his fall is his quieter stretch here has been injury related. And then Marcus Smart has been injury related. There's no one who's actually just played worse than we hoped they would. Right? Anyone?
Yeah, I mean, the Smart thing is, I think, up for debate in that regard. I feel like if you take all of his play this season and just, like, boil it down, like, it looks kind of – it's probably below your expectation when they traded for him, but it's kind of, you know, the shooting's not great, the defense is good. Like, they're a little bit worse offensively when he plays, they're a little bit better defensively when he plays. It adds up to a net positive, but, like, every player on the team adds up to a net positive pretty much. And so, like, it's been okay. Maybe he hasn't been quite as good as a lot of the other guys around him, but also he's done this in the playoffs, and they haven't. And so you sort of have that in the back of your head of, like, you know, maybe you're going to need him more in the postseason than you do right now. I don't know. Marcus Smart thinks a tough one.
Clippers tonight. Tell me about the Clippers.
They haven't totally exceeded expectations. They have, I think, wildly exceeded my expectations for that team. I think it's been a real tribute to Tyronn Lue, who's one of the best head coaches in the league. And that's a pretty anonymous roster other than James Harden, who, like, puts up good numbers but is not the player he used to be in a real sense. They're really winning with defense. That's a kind of a mediocre to bad offensive team, but they're I think, sixth in defense last I looked. They have some really underrated players. I think, you know, I always butcher the pronunciation of his name, but their starting center, Vaka Zubic, I think is one of the more underrated players in the league. And he's really one of the more realistic Zach Edey comps. I think that'll be interesting to see him and Edey go head-to-head tonight. These are two of the two mammoth men who are, like, really big guys who play big and sort of impact both ends of the floor with their size. I think that'll be an interesting sort of matchup there. Zubic has been a real problem for the Grizzlies in the past. We'll see if Zach Edey can help neutralize that a little bit.
Clippers are game up on both Minnesota and Phoenix, and you certainly would not have predicted that. Now, that says as much about Minnesota and Phoenix as it does about the Clippers, right? I suppose. Minnesota and Phoenix, in terms of disappointing in the West?
I think with the Phoenix thing, they've been really good when Kevin Durant's played for the most part, and so I think you knew with that roster, that was a really thin roster dependent on its stars. There was reason to wonder, you know, how many games they were going to get. Now, I had Phoenix, I don't remember, fifth or sixth in the West, so they've disappointed relative to where I had them, but also only a game and a half out of that right now, you know? So I just don't overly look at the standings when teams are separated by, like, a game. We're literally a team can go from fifth to tenth tonight, you know, depending on how things happen. But I think Minnesota probably more so. Minnesota has been very healthy. They've had their guys for the most part, and they just have not performed well even with their team, and that would give me a real pause with them. They've tended to be a little bit better lately, but now they've lost two in a row. They were trending better, and then they had that terrible home loss to the Knicks, and then I think they lost to Golden State, I think also at home after that. And so, yeah, it's real shaky with Minnesota.
All right. You also wrote today, you posted your 10 best movies of the year, and I want to talk to you briefly about those. I've tweeted it out. People can, if they're going to be watching some films over the holiday season, they can check that list out. In no particular order, what the hell is Hundreds of Beavers, which is number 7?
Man, Hundreds of Beavers is so good. I hate that people can't just go see it in a movie theater.
Uh-huh.
You have to watch it on your TV, which you can easily. It's on, I think, Amazon Prime and on Tubi for free, I think, now.
Uh-huh.
And there's just nothing else like it. It was actually made, I think, 2 years ago. It just took this long until this year for it to get out in the theaters. It's a real low-budget, you know, handmade movie by a couple guys, I think, from Wisconsin. And it's like a slapstick farce kind of thing. It's a black and white silent in the sense that there's no dialogue, not in the sense that there's no sound, but it's a dialogue free sort of black and white movie. The beavers are like guys in like beaver costumes, like mascots. And it's about a fur trader at war with beavers, in the snowy wilds.
Is it funny? Is it absurd?
Yes. Yes and yes. It evokes Charlie Chaplin, but it also evokes Looney Tunes, and it evokes Atari 2600 video games. There's a little frat party going on. Like, there's some...
Who would like it?
Some Applejack Pongs. Who would like it?
Yeah, like, is it kids would like it? Grown-ups would like it? Who would like it?
I mean, I think it's probably more dude-oriented, but I don't think even... that. Like, I saw it... I took my son, and they actually showed it at a theater. The Minneapolis Film Society showed it here last week in the theater. So I took him to go see it. And it was a big theater, and every seat was sold. It was completely packed.
Really?
And it's like, yeah. I mean, I joke that it's kind of like the Rocky Horror Picture Show of dad movies. Like, it really is. It is something to see. I highly encourage people to check out Hundreds of Beavers. It is like nothing else.
Hundreds of Beavers.
Very funny.
Okay. I'm jumping around no particular order. You can read the whole... Chris has write-ups of all 10 in his piece today. The Brutalist is at 10. What is The Brutalist?
Brutalist has not... It's only shown right now in New York and L.A., you know, for Oscar consideration. It'll leak out over the country over the next month or so. I'm certain it will. I don't know for a fact, but I would be certain it would show in Memphis. I don't know why it wouldn't. And it sort of came out of nowhere. It's made by this young filmmaker named Brady Corbett, who wasn't that well known. And it was sort of this passion project that took him years to get the funding to do. And it is literally like a 4-hour long big screen epic. It even has an intermission. It's shot on film in this, like, you know, old widescreen format. And it stars Adrian Brody, and he plays a Hungarian architect who flees Europe in the aftermath of World War II and tries to restart his life in America and tries to restart his career. He finds a patron in the form of this industrialist played by Guy Pearce. And it's sort of about architecture and immigration and all kinds of stuff. And it's this big, bold, ambitious movie that I think falters a little bit at the end, although I haven't seen it in a theater yet. I look forward to seeing it again. It's going to be a big deal kind of movie. Like, it will definitely be a Best Picture nominee.
Others that are on the list, we've talked about some of these as the weeks have gone by. A Real Pain is the Jesse Eisenberg film. Juror Number Two, you talked about last, is the new Clint Eastwood film, which you talked about last week. A Complete Unknown, the Dylan film, that's at 6. Your two at the top, we talked about Enora when it was released, and then Challengers was 2. Do you have tears here, Chris, or is this a pretty, like, how do you feel about the movie? How do you feel about the films this year, this group?
I haven't seen Nickel Boys, which I have third in a theater yet. I've only seen it once, and I saw it on a screener. In the past, I used to try to see everything twice before I put it on a year-end list, but that's just not possible anymore. I don't have time for that anymore, much less, you know, access, but especially time. But Enora and Challengers, I saw both in theaters, you know, upon their release. Some Challengers, that was back at the beginning of the year. And I rewatched both last week to see how they held up. And they were even better the second time around. I just think those movies just totally rock. Like, they hit their rhythm from, like, the opening moments and just never get out of rhythm. I think those movies are spectacular. Easily my top two.
We talked about Enora a little bit when it came out. But tell me about Challengers.
So Challengers is ostensibly a sports movie, kind of, a tennis movie.
Sex movie.
And it's a triangle. And it's Zendaya plays a hotshot young tennis player at one point. The movie's sort of told in flashbacks a little bit. But in the chronological beginning of the movie, she's like this hotshot young amateur tennis player, like the best amateur tennis player in the country, female amateur tennis player. And then these two other dudes, like Mike Feist, and Josh O'Connor, who are also highly ranked amateur men's players, but not like the emerging superstar that she is. And they sort of meet each other at an amateur tennis tournament, and then their lives sort of intertwine going forward in ways, and it sort of tells the story of this sort of trio on court and off court, this trio of tennis players, and sort of, it's a movie that's really about sex, frankly. It's sort of tennis is sex is tennis. It's sort of mischievous in that way. There's a lot of metaphorical stuff going on. But the cinematography, the music, like the score is really amazing. The rhythm of it, the way the story is structured, it just pops.
Chris, thanks very much. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We'll talk to you in 2025. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah, Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. You could read his piece, his top 10 movies, It is up at the Daily Memphian now, and I have tweeted it out. We're going to do Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, on Monday, special edition with our man in Washington, D.C. coming up next. Before then, I will tell you, I was just listening to Howie. I like the commercials where Howie talks because you can hear his passion for the stunning jewelry that he sells comes through. And honestly, if today and tomorrow you pop on over to one of their locations, you'll see that in real time, too. The Robert Owen Jewelers has been here 50 years. It's not some, you know, Johnny come lately, 46 years, actually, nearly five decades. And so whether you are shopping for a diamond engagement ring, which is the way to go, they'll walk you through that process. If you're getting engaged in the new year, seriously, think about going to Robert Irwin Jewelers. Among other things, they have the meant-to-be guarantee, and so you have the peace of mind that knowing that if you get a made-to-order, a beautifully crafted diamond engagement ring there, you have 365 days to return it. Honestly, just when Howie takes diamonds out and puts them in front of you and talks about them and walks you through it, you just, I don't know, and then explains you the difference between the lab-grown diamonds and the mined diamonds. It's an education, and that's how sort of they approach it. But the jewelry is absolutely stunning, and that's true if you're getting diamonds or anything else. So here in these last 2 days, if you want to make someone super happy, locations across Memphis, I go to the one across from Novel on Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you, rijewelers.com. Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, on Monday. Coming up next, Jeff Calkins, your 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by our man in Washington, D.C. That's Charles Fishman. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers. Most recently, One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for excellence in business writing, and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. He sends me a list. We're doing this, by the way, on Monday because we're not here tomorrow. And last week, I sprung the news on Charles that last Tuesday was going
to
be...
On the air. Didn't you bring it to me on the air?
No,
the show, maybe just before.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about it in the first segment. Anyway, so we're bringing you back for a special Goodbye 24 edition. You always send me a list of what we're going to talk about. I thought there was going to be a drone update on this list, but there's no drone update on this list, Charles. Don't we have a drone update? What's happened with the drones?
Well, I got to confess that on Twitter this morning, someone tweeted, I'm really tired of reading about the drone. Can we move on to a different story?
Okay, fine. Tipping.
But I'll just tell you what I told you yesterday. The Wall Street Journal had a scoop yesterday. I guess I would call it a scoop-let.
Yeah.
That among the people irritated and determined to get to the bottom of the drones, somebody people say they don't hear much from, was President Joseph Biden, who spoke with the Pentagon four times trying to get to the bottom of the drones. I think three of those times he called them. One of those four times he actually spoke to he spoke to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin directly. Now, the Wall Street Journal story was a little vague, as all the drone stories tend to be, but basically President Biden was told in private, secretly, exactly what we've been told publicly. There's really nothing to worry about, Mr. President. We've looked at it, and it just doesn't appear to be anything of significance. I don't think that's what President Biden wanted to know. He didn't want to be told.
Don't worry about it. You want to be told what the F is it?
I said this to you yesterday.
Yeah.
The perfect metaphor. If it's the year 1250 and I look up at the moon and it changes shape every night, I don't want some newborn astronomer to say, don't worry about it, it's okay. I want you to explain what's happening to my moon. Okay, nothing bad's going to happen. So I don't want somebody from the Pentagon to say, everything's fine, we've looked at it, nothing to worry about. I want someone to tell me what's going on. But the sightings seem to have calmed down as the holiday has taken hold. Probably the drone pilots and the aliens taking the holiday off. We'll hear more in January.
You want to discuss tipping?
Well, you sent me a picture this morning, and the picture was of you having taped an envelope to the top of your either garbage bin or recycling bin, taped the envelope, it said, Merry Christmas, thank you. I was out this morning. I was up at 6:05 to catch. Our garbage is collected on Monday. Three guys on one truck do the garbage. Three guys on one truck do the recycling. I love to race out there with an envelope for each of them and hand them just a Christmas thank you. And I write thank you on the envelopes just like you did, but I want to hit them in person.
I'm not there when they pick up the garbage. I'm not there.
I'm not criticizing. I thought it was very innovative. I thought it was a good idea.
Well, you wonder if you tape a envelope that says thank you to your garbage can, what are the chances that someone else is going to come driving along and rip it off your garbage can and make off with the money? That's the only problem.
I hope they're really small, but it depends on your town and your neighborhood. The sheer joy that I get. The driver of the garbage truck has been the same for at least 3 or 4 years.
By the way, Claire has just texted. She said, Charles has just alerted the entire city of Memphis that they can get the money off of our garbage can. But that's not true, because the garbage people have already come and they've collected the envelope.
I knew that.
Okay, go ahead. Anyway. Yeah, no, you get
that.
Joy out of handing out the tip. It's Merry Christmas.
It was 15 degrees this morning at 6:15. They've been out there for an hour collecting the garbage. They don't say, it's too cold.
A tip, it's not the people at Starbucks or whatever who flip the screen
around.
It's
not the people who hand you a cup of coffee.
Nothing wrong with them either.
So
but yes.
If you haven't done it, if you haven't ever done it, if you can spare a $10 bill, if you can spare a $20 bill, put it in an envelope, thank you, hand it to them. The smile will reward you completely. Those guys, there may be some gals, really work hard. I wanted to report something I don't think we've ever discussed. We have a little creek running through our yard right here in the city of Washington, D.C. It feeds another creek about 100 yards into the forest. Unlike Gary Parish, I actually hike in the woods every day. He's never gone on a hike, just a reminder to the listeners. The creek is freezing. It's been so cold that although the water flows, there's a skim of ice on top of the creek.
It's cold all over the country. The whole country's cold. The whole country's cold. You wanted to do a Ten Commandments update?
Yeah, we really gave this short shrift.
That's because I wasn't interested in the story.
Right, and your lack of interest as a man of faith, as a church-going man, your lack of interest.
It wasn't even the real Ten Commandments. It's a copy.
It is, you're right. It's a copy from the year 400. So seems it's closer to the moment, right? Closer to the moment.
Yes, than the now.
Than we are now. And the funny thing that we got cut off on, this is being auctioned at Sotheby's, a 115-pound marble square with the Ten Commandments carved on it in Paleo Hebrew.
Yep.
Paleo Hebrew. I looked at a big version. Everybody knows I'm a
Hebrew
scholar of the Hebrew language, but I can read modern Hebrew. I had no idea what I was looking at, although some of the stories say that, you know, if you're actually fluent in modern Hebrew, you could make out what this was, the way you could make out the Chaucer's tales in Old English. One of the commandments is missing. There's only 9 of the traditional commandments. The one they left out is actually the one that's proved most controversial over the thousands of years, and that is, thou shalt not take the name of thy Lord in vain.
Really?
Do you know why that's controversial?
No, why?
Because for literally 3,000, 4,000 years, people haven't been able to agree on what it means. What does that mean? Does that mean you can't curse, as in blank damn it?
Whereas you shall not kill is pretty clear. Right. Although self-defense, whatever else, I suppose. Right. Yeah. Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife. Is that one? Is that one of them?
Clear. Yeah, that's pretty clear. Or his property or his belongings. In general, it is now interpreted to mean that often the Lord's name was used in oaths and commercial transactions, and you should not be cheating when you did that. That's how it's interpreted now. But anyway.
But so then they just left out. Go ahead. Was it sold? Yeah.
there were 10 commandments, and the 10th one in this case was an exhortation to worship at a nearby mountain from the group that might have carved these 10 commandments, Mount Gerizim. So they left that one out and said, go worship at Mount Gerizim. Interesting. It was auctioned last week, just 5 minutes. They expected to get between $1 million and $2 million. They got $5,040,000. Despite the New York Times writing a whole story saying, it might have been carved in 1913 when it was found.
Okay.
So $5 million, and it's going back to a museum in Israel for display. So there you go.
Panama Canal's in the news because the president-elect wants to give it back, wants to take it back from Panama.
This is crazy. So in the last 3 days, President-elect Donald Trump has said, we need to take Greenland from Denmark. We need to take the Panama Canal from Panama.
Fair.
And he's reaffirmed over and over again the idea that Canada should be a state. That's almost so disrespectful.
Fair.
It doesn't even merit discussion.
Jeffrey and I are on board. Yeah, go ahead.
You want Canada. Okay.
Yeah, seems to be fair. Yeah.
Panama got the Panama Canal through a treaty. Like, they didn't take it from us. They didn't steal it from us. They negotiated a treaty during the Jimmy Carter administration. You know how the Panamanians have run the Panama Canal? Do you have any idea how that's gone?
I bet they've done it. I bet they've done it brilliantly.
Why do you say that?
Because you wouldn't be asking the question had they done it otherwise. They've done it brilliantly, would be my prediction.
They have run the Panama Canal. Apparently, President-elect Trump hasn't done any reading or briefing on this much, much better than we did. When we turned it over to them, it was a money-losing operation. The Panamanians have doubled the amount of cargo that goes through the canal every year. Now, think about that. It's not like a port or an airport. You can't just expand and expand and expand. They have expanded it to accommodate bigger ships. They've doubled the amount of cargo. And last year, the year that ended just in this September, that's when their fiscal year ends, it turned a profit of $3.5 billion.
Yeah, but how much of that went to us?
Not revenue,
I ask you, how much of that went to the United States of America?
In a country that only has a GDP of $80 billion, almost $4 billion came from the canal. So that's kind of cool. You know how much of that profit went to the United
States? How much?
Zero.
That's what I'm saying. If we ran it, maybe we could pocket the money. Maybe you're missing the point. And think of what we could do with Greenland if we owned Greenland.
If we did.
We did. A great time. All right.
Take a guess for 1 minute at what you think the typical, what's the average toll? Last year, there were water shortages, and last year, only 27 ships a day have transited the canal. That's in both directions. The maximum is 36 when things are going well in terms of water. Take a guess at what the typical toll for a ship. We know, the expressways are now three.
It costs $750,000. You got to throw three giant-ass quarters in the toll thing.
$750,000, wow. The average toll is $50,000. The maximum toll for mega container ships, $450,000.
That's what I was thinking.
Although President-elect Trump is complaining about the tolls, you know how the tolls are set?
No.
They're set with this system I think the president-elect is familiar with, capitalism.
Capitalism. Okay.
They are set by what the market will
be. Are wasting more space than ever. What does that mean?
This is crazy. This is such a crazy report. The Real Estate Agents Association has just released a report on excess bedrooms in American homes. Excess bedrooms in American homes. An excess bedroom is 2 bedrooms more than the number of occupants in the house. They allow 1 bedroom per person plus an office. Excess is more than that. So 2 people, 3 bedrooms would be quote-unquote normal, 4 bedrooms would be excess. There are 31.9 million excess bedrooms in America, the highest on record. 9% of all bedrooms in all homes are essentially empty. And that's at a moment when
when housing is really short.
With housing shortage. Yeah. Memphis is number 4 in the country
in
for excess bedrooms.
Really?
Top 10 list, Memphis, number 4 in the country for excess bedrooms. Ogden, Utah, number 1. Colorado Springs, number 2. Salt Lake City, number 3. Memphis, number 4, all with about 12%.
We got some retail news we got to bang through really quickly because we're getting towards the end of this
year. Big Lots is going out of business. 900 stores, kind of amazing. Kind of a muddled retail picture. Party City, I was really sorry to see this. Party City going out of business. I kind of like a Party City story.
Is that the balloons and all the party stuff?
Like balloons and just crazy kinds of, like when you walk in there, you think, my parties haven't actually been creative enough. That's what I think. 750 Party City stores, but here's the thing. I called the Party City in Memphis. There's 2 in Memphis. And I said, oh, you guys are open. Are you going out of business? And Michael, who is staffing the Party City this morning, said, we're franchised. We're not company owned. We're not closing.
So Party Cities in Memphis are staying open.
He said,
party on, Memphis!
I said, will the name stay the same? He said, I don't know that level of detail. But that's nice. That's 1,600 stores that were both announced Thursday and Friday of last week. Think about the number of people, thousands of people thrown out of work. The Party City corporate people were told on Friday that Friday was their last day at work, and their benefits were terminated immediately. That's
not very Christmassy.
That's crappy.
Barnes
that's
& Noble crappy. And Nordstrom. What do you have to tell us about Barnes & Noble Nordstrom?
We never talk about Nordstrom. Nordstrom, literally 15 years ago, 10 years ago, was the epitome of brilliant retailing.
Yeah.
Now sort of a victim of the death of department stores. Sold this morning.
Really?
Back to the family that founded it for $6 billion. That's kind of interesting. And Barnes & Noble, I went to a Barnes & Noble that just reopened in Georgetown in Washington, D.C. Actually reopened in a building that it closed in 10 years ago. Spectacular store. We have a legendary privately owned small business bookstore, Politics and Prose, right near our house. That place is a special place. This Barnes & Noble, really, really beautiful. 3 stories, huge internal atrium. I was really impressed. There are still 600 Barnes & Nobles, and they opened 80 this year. So the
it's
death
growing.
Of the bookstore.
Interesting.
Right, the death. Right, right. Although I did read that Costco is going to stop selling books starting next year.
Saw that.
That is really sad.
Okay.
That is really sad.
As we wind down here, Charles, do you have resolutions?
I have two thoughts.
Do you have, yes,
two
what
thoughts,
are your thoughts?
Two thoughts for the end of the year. This is the last segment. We don't review the year at the end of the year. We review the year in March on the anniversary of what I consider the show. Right. But would you consider the segment? The review comes
started
in March.
Started during COVID. Yeah.
Started during COVID. Started the week after the COVID shutdown. Two thoughts. Here's a New Year's resolution that's as painful as doing sit-ups, and I've started to do sit-ups again, so I know what I'm talking about. Painful as push-ups, but more important, get a password manager in the new year. Get yourself a password manager for Christmas.
What does that do? Manager, how does it even work? What does that even mean?
A password manager stores your passwords for each website. If you ask it,
you have to input them. How does it do that? I don't understand that.
When you log on to your bank account, it will store the logon and the password you type in the first time in its thing, and then you never need to remember the password again. It will then offer.
Why won't people crack your password manager just like they can crack your bank account?
The key is that for the password manager, you pick a really elaborate password that you can remember, but that is not hackable. My password is that password manager password's long. And one thought for the next 5 days, just put aside the worries of 2024. And put off the ways of 2025 and just
you can't do
relax
that.
Into the moment.
I went to lunch with someone last week and we just were discussing how anxiety is the malady of our day. Like
Right. Well, that,
so how do you just decide to lay anxiety aside? I would love to know how to do that.
There's a show I listen to every Sunday called The Big Broadcast of Vintage Radio, and that's what the host, Murray Horowitz, says. Put aside the worries of the week for this 2 hours. Put aside the worries of next week. You can't do anything about them. That's what I would urge you. For 5 days, put aside
the
worries
of
last year and the worries of next year, and just live in the moment.
In the moment. All right, thank you. I'll try that. Thank you, Charles. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. We appreciate it.
Merry Christmas.
How are you with anxiety, Jeffrey?
I'm pretty good with it. No, my wife.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, she does the worrying for you.
Correct.
You've offloaded this.
Yes,
you've got like an anxiety manager.
Yes. A toss sweep.
What's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. J.R. Moore will be hosting with Brad. I'll join them at 12:30. Coach Hurd will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Also, Connor, one last time, will be hosting Gabe in 2024.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a spectacular holiday, and we will be back before you know it. But for now, our work is done.